copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
Good morning.
Good morning.
This is very exciting to me. I really am excited to talk about discipleship. It's especially multiplication. It's an issue of my heart. There is only one more thing that excites me more, and that's relationship with Jesus. And so I'll try to cover three areas. And I'll try to speak on the method that that Jesus used, how we see multiplication in his ministry. Then I'll talk about the multiplication in the ideal world, and then multiplication in the real world. And I hope that by the end, we will have time for personal reflection and some action steps that the Lord is leading us to. I'm involved with a ministry called Integrity Life, together with my colleagues Katka and Gabi, who are here. And we have been serving at the university, reaching out to university students. And discipleship is a very natural next step after they become Christians. And multiplication is the key for the ministry to continue on. Let me come to the first topic, and that is Jesus' model of multiplication. And I know many things that I will be talking about you have already talked about at this. So let me just summarize them briefly, and then we will have question time, so we will see which ones are more important. We can see very clearly in Jesus' earthly ministry that he spent time with the multitudes, but right at the beginning of his ministry, he chose several. And the closer the time of his departure from this earth and being with his Father, the less time he spent with the multitudes and the more time he spent with the few. So he spent more and more time with less and less people. He I have seen this very simple diagram. It was like the circles. Here was the 500. We read about 500 disciples in 1 Corinthians 15. He appeared to 500 brothers. So there must have been about 500 people around him. And then we read about 70 whom he sent to witness, to share the good news. And then, of course, we read about 12 that he chose, that he called to be his disciples. And then we hear about 3, Peter, James, and John, who were even closer to him, who were present at some special moments in his life and ministry. So only those 3 were, for example, present when he raised up the Jairus' daughter, and at the Mount of Transfiguration, and at the Gethsemane. So his focus was, like you see these circles, he was focusing on 3 and then 12, and then it went on. Let me give you a small story from my ministry. I became a Christian in 1982, and at about maybe about a year or two after I became a Christian, we were a really small group. It was no more than five of us, university students in the city of Brno, communist Czechoslovakia. And there was a Bible teacher that we have known who came to encourage us as our small group. And I remember up to this day what he was talking about. He was talking on the passage when Jesus, after his resurrection, he appeared to the two disciples that were walking from Jerusalem down to Emmaus, the small village. And his point was, it was a small place, and they even were not there. So he met them in the middle of nowhere. Two people that were not significant. We don't even know their names. They were not really important. They were not significant. And his point was this. God is not going to use big groups of people. He is going to use small groups and individuals. And at that moment, I knew it is true. And it really, really touched my heart. And I said to myself, okay, it's no problem. We are only a group of five. That is not the issue. Well, later I heard the same man say something like this about his first experience with us. He said, I came to Brno to this little group of five Christians, and they tried to sing Christian songs. It was depressing. and their main leader, he couldn't find the book of Ephesians in the Bible. Him and me. Five or 10 years later, the same person was crying when we was hearing the singing of our group. It touched so much his heart. And a few years later, this group of five grew into 100. In 10 years, it was a more than 100 of disciples of Christ, and we knew that God can do anything. He is not limited with the numbers. What He is limited with is our availability. It's our heart. And so let me ask you a question. I think we live in a culture where, you know, the message is the more is better, right? The bigger is better. How does it influence the way we are thinking about ministry? What do you think?
We are intimidated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We despise the few.
Yeah. 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 Many times you meet a person and what church do you go to? How big is your church? We are really interested in that. And I'm not saying that big is it's necessarily bad. I'm just saying that we are really thinking in these terms. And I think that God is not so much interested in big numbers. He is interested in quality, as you have discussed before. Okay. E.M. Bounds said, men are God's method. His method are people, are men. So, Jesus' mandate was to make disciples. And he has done it by meeting their spiritual needs. And he was challenging them to the next level. A very helpful author and disciple maker Dan Spader, he said something like this: Jesus balanced his efforts to win the lost, to build believers, and to equip a few workers. Jesus' disciple-making strategy follows four basic challenges. So he noticed, Spader noticed, when he studied the Gospels chronologically, that the first challenge, simple challenge to the disciples, was come and see. Come and see. We read it John 1:39. And then he challenged them to the higher level, to the next level of commitment, and that was follow me. That's John 1:43. And then there is a next level of commitment. Follow me, and I will make you the fishers of men. Matthew 4:19. And the final call was go and bear fruit. John 15:16 and other passages. So we see that he was moving them, and where it ends, the goal is reproduction. The goal was multiplication. The goal was to bear fruit. He clearly expected them to bear fruit. He said in John 15:5 that he's the vine and we disciples are the branches. And he said, whoever abides in me will bear much fruit. For without me you can do nothing. And then in Matthew 13, he put another parable of the mustard seed. And then in John 17, in his high priestly prayer, Jesus prays. He says, I do not ask for this only, but also for those who will believe in me through their word, that they will be all be one, just as you in me and I in you. So he fully expected his disciples to multiply, to be fruitful, to be bringing others to faith, to faith in Jesus. He expected that others will believe through them. And then he sums it all up in the verse that all of us know and all of us probably memorized, and that is the Great Commission. It's in Matthew 28:18-20. And we'll spend a little time on that. Just please find it in your Bibles, and there are, of course, different translations, but the one I have, English Standard, is this. Jesus came to them and said, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Go therefore and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all that I have commanded you. And behold, I am with you always to the end of the age. Let's first notice the context. And you have probably known this, but let me just repeat it. He reminds the five disciples three times before about the meeting in Galilee. The first place, it's Matthew 26:31, when Jesus is saying to them, and Jesus said to them, you will all fall away because of me this night. That was before his crucifixion. For it is written, I will strike the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock will be scattered. And verse 32, but after I am raised up, I will go before you to Galilee. He announced them, I'll be in the Galilee before you, meaning I expect that you will be following me there. And then in 28, Matthew 28, 7, he reminds them again, saying, then go quickly and tell his disciples that he is risen from the dead, and behold, he is going before you to Galilee. There you will see him. The angel says to the women, go tell disciples, you got to go to Galilee. There you will meet Jesus. And then, a few verses after that, verse 10, Jesus said to them, do not be afraid. Go and tell my brothers to go to Galilee, and there they will see me. What kind of meeting was there? That he was making really sure that they will not miss it. Well, he gave the Great Commission. So the main controlling verb in the Great Commission is make disciples. The other verbs in the verse are the participles, meaning that they are defining the way how it should be done. And if you noticed, there is a built-in reproduction also in that. Because he says they should be teaching the other disciples everything I have commanded you. What one of the things that he had commanded them was to go and make disciples. They should be expecting the disciples to do the same, to be making other disciples who in turn will be making the next generation of disciples. Also notice that there is a relationship that is really important here. He says, and behold, I am with you always. Why was Jesus saying this? Because he said also, I'll send the Holy Spirit and he'll be with you always. Well, I think the reason is that in going and making disciples, there will be a special presence of Jesus if we do that and if we obey that. And relationship with him is the most important thing in disciple making. Also notice that it is not a recommendation, it's a command. Go make disciples. Robert Coleman, in his book Master Plan of Evangelism, which was written in 1963, I remember that because I was born that year, he says these prophetic words. The command to go and make disciples is the least obeyed command in the Bible. When I look at the church, it is the most neglected or disobeyed command that I see, unfortunately. Okay, let's have some discussion. Do you think that every believer should be a disciple of Christ? Sure you do. Is that right? Do you think that all of the believers should be disciple makers? Yeah. Then, okay, now a question that requires a little more thinking. What is the difference between disciple and disciple maker? What are some of the things that are different for disciple and disciple maker?
A disciple is the one who follows, and a disciple maker is the one who teaches how to follow.
Mm-hmm.
Disciple is a receiver, a disciple maker is a giver.
Mm-hmm. Receiver and giver, one who follows, one who teaches how to follow. Wonderful.
A disciple maker is one who went through discipleship himself with his curiosity.
Uh-huh. Disciple maker went through discipleship himself first, right?
May I ask about the verb tense? Do you mean to put that in the past?
That's what I was thinking when you said that he should be still a disciple. A disciple maker should remain a disciple in a certain way.
So what verb do we, or what tense do we want to use?
What is the difference? They are in the same process all the time.
Well, okay. I would say sanctification is all like.
So was and
is
going. Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the participle? Was and is in discipleship? Or what did you say?
Disciple maker went through discipleship.
Okay.
I mean, in many of our churches, we have churches who want to turn quickly to discipleship, and then they just divide the church members and say, you're a leader, but they didn't go through discipleship themselves.
Okay.
So they don't really know
okay.
what to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a disciple maker is someone who faithfully was part of the discipleship.
Disciple maker must be part of the process, right? Mm-hmm.
In an ideal world, all the disciples have to be disciple makers, and disciple makers have to be disciples.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
See, you know, go into the world and make disciples, but you are disciples, you make disciples.
Right.
And they...
you know what I mean? Sure, yeah.
So this is an ideal world.
Yes.
I would say that disciple maker is someone who thinks generationally, thinks about the next generation and next generation and next generation.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Disciple maker is also obey to God.
Sorry?
It's obey to God because this is a command what we
command. Obeying to God. Please, Tony.
I'm not thinking about the disciple maker is somebody who's a step or two before the others who already received maybe training tools, equipment, and revelation from the group, and pass away to the others who is discipling. But it is a process, it's a long process, that the disciple maker need always to develop his skill too, because when we start to stop to learn, then we will be failing our
good program. Point.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I think that if we look at it organically or in family terms,
right,
it would be child and parent.
Okay.
Would be good ways.
Yeah.
If we look at it in terms of God's family.
Right. So the maturity is the factor there.
And the meta narrative of all creation where at first, it's be fruitful and multiply. I want children.
Mm-hmm.
But then the reset after evil entered the world, the reset when Jesus came and dealt with evil, then kind of a reset of be fruitful and multiply is go and make disciples, but the continuity is it's a family organic kind of
okay.
metaphor.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
To this.
Very, very helpful.
Is there something to write down on that one?
Family.
Family? Okay. Spiritual child, spiritual
mm-hmm.
parent.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, this is quite important to think about that, about the distinction. Why? Because it will impact on what we do with the disciples. So let's think, how will making disciples differ from making disciple makers? Would it be the same things? Or what? Yes?
I think if we want to make disciple makers, we have to have it on mind that we have to raise them to be independent from us,
mm-hmm.
but dependent on the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
that it's a kind of a parent-child
right.
relationship, when the focus of the parent is that, I want you close for now, but I want you to...
Exactly.
You come to the point when you depart from me. So,
oh yeah.
Because if we just make disciples, it's there is that chance that we bind them to us because we like mm-hmm. to be a parent and take mm-hmm. care of others, and
yeah.
there is that unhealthy connection.
Mm-hmm. Super. Anything else?
They must be motivated and equipped to do the same to others what we did to them.
Mm-hmm. So. If we have that in mind, it will really influence maybe not so much the content, but very much the way that we are working with him. We do it with the expectation that he will do it later in turn with somebody else. And also, it will influence our way of doing it. Because... you know, we need to remember that if we make it very complicated, he will not be able to do the same. Maybe he's different than us, you know. So it needs to be simple. So we need to use simple tools, simple, in other words, transferable tools, concepts, materials, ideas, because otherwise... In the second and third generation, it will get lost completely, or it will become something completely different. Great discussion. And so we see Jesus doing it, and then we see the disciples obeying him. In the book of Acts, we read that these simple men, God used them to turn the world upside down. And they really obeyed the principles that Jesus taught them. Okay, let's spend a little time about talking about the multiplication in the ideal world. We see the purpose is to see the potential, okay, of the method, right? So I'm sure maybe some of you've heard the story. It's a legend of a of a father who's got two sons, and he told them, you know, you can choose. I can give you $1 a week. And I will be giving it to you for 1 year. So you can choose this, or I can give you 1 cent the first week, the 2 cents the next week, the 4 cents the next, and 8 and 16 and so on. And I'll be doing it for 1 year this way. Which one you choose? So the one son, he chose $1. It seemed to be fine. And so he ended up having $52 in the end of the year. The second was more clever, and so he chose 1 cent. You know, by the end of the year, he got enough money to live comfortable life for the rest of his life. Actually, you know, he got $22.5 trillion. And so it, I know everything's relative, but that should go, you know. Another illustration is again very classic. You have the chessboard, right? And then you put one grain of wheat, for example, to the first square, and there is 64, right? So the second you put 2, third 4, 8, 16, 32, and so on. Supposedly this was the one who invented the game, the chess, was given this could ask for a reward, and so he asked this reward, okay, to the ruler, to the king, and you know how much grain he would have at the 64th square. Quite enough, because it would cover the whole subcontinent of India to the like 50 feet, so it's 15 meters, to the height of the 15 meters. Well, so it's a geometrical multiplication, and the world knows this. The many businesses use it. The multi-level marketing companies are very much aware of this principle, and some of them are using it and some of them are misusing it. And I think you could come up with the examples. Now, let me give you an example from an area that we are really concerned about, that is the disciple making. And again, you read it in different versions of it in different literature, and it's the purpose is to realize the potential. So the addition seems to be a good method. Very effective method. Let's say there is I am a gifted evangelist, okay, and I am able to speak with 1,000 people every day for the whole year. And fantastic results of my wonderful ministry would be that all of them would become Christians, okay? Then how long, how many years it would take me to evangelize the world? I don't think I would be able to make it, because it would take something like 15,000 years. Well, then let's talk about a little more realistic scenario. I'll be speaking about Jesus with my friends in the environment that the Lord has put me into. And let's say that 3 of the unbelievers will become Christians, will begin to follow Jesus, and I will decide to spend time with them. And they will decide to become Jesus' disciples and grow in their faith. I'll be working with the 3 of them for 2 years. I'll be teaching them, helping them, I'll be loving them. I'm making sure that they will gradually become more and more independent. I'll be taking them with you, whatever other ministry I do. I will bring them to the fellowship with other believers, and I will be a friend for them. And I will help them to do the same with others. You know, the first year, there will be three people, three disciples. The second year, there will be still three disciples. Then the next year, they will start multiplying, and it would be nine of them. And after 2 years, there will be 27 of them. After 11 years, there will be 700 of them. After 15 years, there will be 6,000 of them. After 23 years, it will be 500,000. And after 33 years, it will be 130 million of them. And after one generation, 40 years, and I think this is a perfect example. It must be inspired because it's one generation, okay? You evangelize the whole world. There will be over 10 billion of people. Now, of course, this is the ideal, right? And we all know it's not working like that. But let us draw some little conclusions out of this thing, okay? Number one, Jesus gave us this multiplication as his method, as his marching orders, and the potential is that we can reach the world in one generation. Because the beauty of it is that I am not on my own, okay? There are more disciples today in the world. And but what happens very often is that we want to make it better. We want to improve Jesus' method, okay? So we do it our way, not his way. How can you improve Jesus? Well, then the other observation is that the key is the quality. It really is important who you work with at the beginning. And the quality of people that you decide to invest into.
Selecting whom to disciple.
Right, exactly. And then they need to be faithful, right? Faithfulness is another word, another key that is a big factor in the success of the multiplication process. Another thing is that it's quite slow at the beginning. And we are not patient by nature. We want to see big results immediately. And, you know, even in this theoretical case, it took 2 years to build the three, right? And so you don't see big things at the beginning, but we've got to stick with it. We've got to be patient. Another thing, what excites me greatly is that through this simple method of making disciples that make other disciples, I can become part of something that's much bigger than me. Something that really has impact and makes a difference. So, whatever else I do, and I'm not saying that I can't do anything else, of course we need to do other things, but whatever other things we do, meaning we can be great engineers and doctors and teachers, we can be good workers, but it would be very, very sad if it would be all we do. Whatever else we do, we've got to make sure not to neglect into the lives of a few, helping them to become multiplying disciples. And It doesn't work mechanically, like you know, mathematics. There is spiritual and supernatural aspect and principle behind it. And it means also I am not in control. It means that I am not the one who is producing the growth. Neither myself, my own growth, or the growth of the disciples. We hear it clearly that God is causing the growth. We are only watering. We are only tending. And then the success is measured by multiplication and nothing else. And then another aspect there is that it's so rewarding to be involved in somebody else's life and see what God is doing. What great miracles, great things he's doing in working in his or her life. And I can be a small part of it. God can do it without me. But he chose to use me. And that's a blown-mind thing. Mind-blowing. Dawson Trotman, the founder of the Navigators, said this: activity is no substitute for production, and production is no substitute for reproduction. Very true and wise words.
Once again, please.
Activity is no substitute for production, and production is no substitute for reproduction. Dawson Trotman. Okay, the question is, how do we know at the beginning who to invest in? I really believe that God is sovereign. He's putting us in a context where he has something wonderful in mind for. So I would say, very naturally, it would be the new Christians, the new people that come to know Christ, that came to know Jesus around me. So I come to them, and if there are many of them, then I select a few that I think are the most potential, or I have the most natural relation to them. If there is not very many of them, I start working with those who are there, because the Jesus' disciples, they were not stars at the beginning, right? And so what I think is necessary for every new believer is that we help them to go through the basics of Christian life, basics of relationship with Jesus. That's the very minimum we can do for them. And then, as we said, we look at the potential and spend more time with those who really want to follow Jesus. It's not very fruitful if you spend years and years and years with somebody who is lukewarm, who doesn't really want to give up his comfort or other things. He's got the small gods that he wants to he doesn't want to yield to Jesus fully. So I would say it's there are several factors in choosing the ones. Please.
Yeah, but how do you know who has the potential? Because, I mean, you earlier wrote down 500 people wanted to follow Jesus. So he selected only 12. So what made these 12 different? How how do we know which of the masses of... I think lots of people would like to learn from us.
Right.
Who are these two, three, four people?
Yeah. So the question is, how do we know really the right ones to invest into? Because Jesus, there was 500 people around him, and he still chose 12. So what was the difference between the 12 and the 500, right? We don't know what was the difference. What we know was, and what we should follow definitely, is that Jesus prayed before he chose the 12. He spent lots of time in prayer. He was asking his Father. We should do the same. Lord, here I am. Use me. I don't really have the wisdom to know who to invest into more. And there is so many needs around me. Well, we have to continue and move to the real world, okay? And we are already talking about the real world. But our tendencies is to take shortcuts. Because it's slow at the beginning, and because it's time consuming, because the individual care is costly, and then you could come up with other reasons why we really want to take shortcuts, that we are not going really deep. But let's talk and discuss about the obstacles. What do you think are the real obstacles in our real situations, in the world we live in, that prevent us to really invest into disciple-making disciples? What are the problems?
People are busy.
Busyness.
I think that also maybe our fear that we are not adequate enough and that we should not intrude into people's lives.
Our fear that we are not good enough and we shouldn't actually. Who am I to speak to my brother, right? So we are afraid to be really coming close to them, because we don't feel confident and comfortable.
One of the same dynamics as it work is at the same level of evangelism. I think that's somebody else's job.
Okay, it's somebody else's job. Right.
I'm the evangelist. I share with people, and then there's someone else.
Yeah.
To disciple them.
Right. Right.
It's not a relay race in that sense.
Right.
We have to keep the relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. Is the some people may say, well, it's the job of my pastor, right? He should do everything. Please.
The people have too much option today, and the New Age generation is seeing today what is the option to what I want to join, and the discipleship needs some commitment.
Yeah.
And really choosing that I want to go.
So many options, so many distractions, sometimes so many good things that we neglect to do the best. Thank you.
We're 20 minutes.
2 minutes?
We're 20 minutes.
I think, who wants another child?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's messy.
Yeah.
It just, who wants to take that on?
Yeah. Exactly. Well, it's good to be thinking about those things, right? Because some of them are just here, and we don't see them. Let me finish with a simple action plan, or actually with three simple things, what it would take to start making disciples. And then we go to small groups and have some time of personal application. What does it take? Number one, it's very simple. I must be available to God. I must be convinced that disciple making and multiplication is the best thing I can do in my life, to serve others, to be the obedient follower of Jesus Christ. So it takes conviction and it takes decision. It's still the first one. I need to decide, Lord, here I am available. Use me. Number two, I must be willing to pay the price. There is no reproduction without sacrifice. Everyone who has ever been a parent knows that. And Jesus modeled that. It cost him his life. He sacrificed his life. And he says that the grain, unless it dies, will not bring any fruit, any crops. We need to die. We need to die to ourselves. Dying to self, that's not easy. That's a big price to pay. And Jesus is saying in the Luke's Gospel two parables, maybe more, but I am thinking of two, of the builder who needs to think first if he's got enough to finish the building, and then the king or the general who needs to think first before going into the war. And so we've got to pay the price. And the price is not little, but let's remember, not paying the price is more costly than paying it. Now, number three, it requires a simple plan. And there is lots of tools and resources available that we don't have to come up with it on our own. Many of them are very good, very useful, simple but deep. And we have developed with our ministry a sheet of paper where there is certain stages of development or growth of a disciple, and it's paired up with things that they should know, they should be aware of, the character issues, and we can share it with you. I think, Katka, do you have it here? You can bring it, you know, for next session if you would be interested. Again, it's no rocket science. It's just one example of how you do it. So these three things. Let us spend each one of us on in personal reflection and answer this question. What was God talking to me during this time? What really touched my heart? What I had to be really, really reflecting on? Okay, so that's the first one. The second is, what is my personal situation concerning spiritual reproduction? And the third one, what is God leading me to implement in my ministry? You can also add how and when to this one.
The way it didn't hit me until you presented the biblical model and then the ideal world, mm-hmm. because that's how multiplication is always presented, as this ideal mm-hmm. form, mm-hmm. mathematics, mm-hmm. pure. Yeah. And then you said, let's talk about the real world. Yeah. That was really powerful.
Thank you.
The Bible is true, but then we have this ideal world of how mm-hmm. things should be. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes, good.
Great.
Good.
Mm-hmm. What network are you normally in?
Sorry?
What network are you normally in?
I'm sorry.
What network?
Oh, network. Leaders of Christian organizations. But the next session I talk in the basic discipleship with Mark Stirling.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Super.
Yeah, it's on the connection between evangelism, discipleship, and leadership development.
Oh, cool. I would like to hear that too.
Thanks. Thanks, Jeff. They are a great group of people. They, yeah.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah. Yeah. Very, very engaged.
Yeah. Yeah. I will see if I can get the recording of the talk that you give, because that's what we talk a lot about.
All right.
Leader development network.
It's also, I think, I am doing the same tomorrow in the afternoon seminars.
Okay.
So, yeah. If you feel that it would be useful for some of them, just you can send them there.
Went to Romania and we had limited contact, and he came over and visited me for a summer, and it was really a discouraging experience because it just felt like there had been no growth when I left. And so then that made me think how important it is for the disciple maker to also be a disciple at the same time, because I still don't know what to do with that situation. Is it something I did or didn't do? Should I have done more follow-up? I didn't engage with him too much. He was with me in Romania because I didn't know what to do at that point. Or is it not any of my responsibility, and we just wait on God to get the growth? I think that the analogy of, it's a child is a really good analogy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. It's always great to have a network of others who are doing the same, and we can come together, encourage one another, and we can be encouraging, those situations, so it's costly. That's one of the price we pay, right? And you can't make him, grow. You can't do it. It's not necessarily that you did something wrong, You probably didn't. Okay. I did so many bad things with my disciples. They survived. And they are now multiplying,